In Ukraine, we are entering the fourth year of the war and we see how a great power, Russia, is not capable of advancing more than 30 kilometers per year in a single place on the front, despite having many more armored vehicles and personnel than Ukraine. And this immobility of the front and this difficulty in advancing is extremely striking from a historical perspective. For example, in the war, the thinker Karl von Clausewitz indicated that for a successful assault, the general rule was to have a numerical superiority of 3-1 to take well-defended fortifications, 2.5-1 against forces that were protected by improvised defenses, and only to take fortified positions in high mountains did he recommend superiority ratios of up to 6-1. In Ukraine, however, we have seen assaults by completely reinforced platoons, equipped with more than 50 troops and 8 armored vehicles and tanks, whose mission is barely to take a couple of trenches with less than 12 soldiers, and despite this they still fail. Instead, in the past, the 3-1 rule was mostly used. What was the logic behind that? Well, the logic was that, basically, the first one would fall, the second one would take the position or damage it, and the third one would even be able to occupy the position or advance further. But these and other rules have changed in Ukraine, and not only on the Russian side. Obviously, after all, the Ukrainians suffered three-quarters of the same thing during the counteroffensive of 2023. That's why in this video I want to find out how a unit falls during an assault, how they fail, because after all, the majority of attacks end in failure. What exactly do they encounter when they advance? And it's not just a question of artillery or drones, it's much deeper. Naturally, this is a tough, even terrible issue, because behind the casualties or the losses of the units, we're always talking about soldiers, people who risk and sacrifice the most valuable thing in their lives. That's why we're going to try to approach it with all due respect, as always, and we're going to try to understand what the purpose of the assaults that are currently taking place in Ukraine is and what challenge they are facing, basically from a personal perspective. So I'm Yago Rodriguez, welcome to all of you who are part of this community interested in military matters in Spanish. And now let's get started. In video games, this happens a lot and it seems very simple. In a first-person shooter like Squad, it usually happens that during an assault, the defender has better positions or armor in their favor. So, shot by shot, the attackers start to dissolve and lose. In games like War Game, Red Dragon, it's often the artillery shells, who use high explosive shells to crush a unit that gradually loses extras. While in games like Age of Empires 2, for example, you see how in combat, the soldiers that make up the army lose points from their health bar as they face others. However, on the front lines, although things can look a lot like a video game, especially from the command center, since Discord or OBS are used there to connect with the units on the front lines, on that very front line, where the soldier is with his rifle, things look very different and naturally have little to do with a video game. However, I'm afraid that the fastest way for a unit to be defeated is, as in video games, by a drone that drops them 10 kilometers from the front and calls in an artillery strike or a drone bombing. That's the real key. We're not just talking about the infantry unit launching its assault on the trench. We'll see about that, but we have to start by getting closer to the front lines, which is becoming increasingly dangerous. One initial risk is the concentrations of dozens or hundreds of recruits in military bases and training centers. Someone finds out that there are a lot of men gathered in a building or doing target practice or fortification and decides to fire a long-range missile at them. It is true that this type of bombing from the very rear is not very common, because launching a missile that has a range of hundreds of kilometers on personnel is quite inefficient. These types of weapons are normally reserved for more valuable targets, because they are very scarce. But, as this has transformed into a war of attrition, a war in which you seek to inflict casualties, long-range precision weapons have come to be used on large groups of people, mainly recruits who are training. In that sense, unfortunately, war has become a casualty counter. In any case, what is relevant here? Well, This is actually anecdotal. The bulk of the casualties obviously do not come in that deep rear when you are training, but rather when you are already very close to the front. The first line of the front was previously understood as the two parallel defensive lines, mine and my enemy's, combined with the no man's land in between. Due to the range of machine guns and other infantry weapons, this front line was usually estimated to be approximately 2 to 4 kilometers wide. The truth is that everything inside that strip was extremely dangerous, just as it is today to be exposed to drones. For example, in World War I, despite the fact that there were millions of men in the trenches, the no man's land seemed like a desert, as if there were not a single soul. And that's because anyone who stuck their head out was very likely to be shot. So, with a little understanding of what the front was in the past, what was understood as the front, let's start analyzing infantry assaults. Dismounted infantry advancing on foot from their trench to the enemy's, or infantry that is disembarked from their armored vehicles a few meters from the position to jump and then takes it, in other words, mechanized infantry. Because the reality is that there comes a time when the infantry is usually alone and the vehicles retreat. At that point in the assault, the least of the threats are enemy riflemen. I mean, bullets scare anyone, but often people fire without really seeing what they're shooting at, so most of the ammunition is wasted and not well aimed. Obviously, when you get into close combat, when you're less than 10 or 20 meters away, the enemy rifleman is undoubtedly the biggest concern. But the truth is that long before that happens, from what I've seen in dozens of videos of confrontations in Ukraine over the last year, what you see is that in the end what's hitting you are basically three weapons: mortars, drones, and automatic grenade launchers used for indirect fire, that is, pointing upwards. Interestingly, mortars and automatic grenades usually arrive before the drones. That's because defenders usually have pre-planned firing zones, and as soon as enemy presence is detected, all they need to do is make the relevant corrections to the unit and fire. Pocket bombers, on the other hand, are not yet common enough to be on every front line, although we're moving towards that. And usually, especially in the case of pocket bombers, they need advance notice. The general needs to tell them, "Hey, this position is seeing an attack and we want you to deploy one of these devices. We need support." Quote. On the other hand, these are weapons that are already ready, and as soon as they say attack, they're ready to load ammunition and fire in that area. In addition, most of the time the drone searches using low-resolution pilot cameras. So it's not so easy to identify enemy personnel because they can't be seen very well. It's a different story if we're talking about drones with thermal cameras or night vision if it's dark. It's harder to hide against them, but it's not impossible either. And it's true that thermal cameras aren't that common right now. So, when an assault operation goes well and you reach the enemy trench and manage to clear it, sometimes you'll find that the enemy trench isn't even defended, although they will leave explosives and booby traps in it. But the truth is that this will be a good attack, an attack in which you've reached and gotten into the enemy trench. And what comes after that? The attack, or rather the counterattack with drones. In the past, the doctrine used to tell you, no, when you take the enemy infantry's trench, they're going to counterattack, they're going to launch a flanking counterattack, they're going to try to do something. Since that's becoming more dangerous every day and they don't want to risk personnel, it's being replaced with a kind of counterattack with drones. They're going to send several pocket bombers and several drones to see where you are and try to attack you and request fire on your position. Now, if you do the attack and the planning too badly, you're too slow, you choose the wrong day and weather conditions, or you're just unlucky, then you're screwed. Then the kamikaze drones start to appear like deadly mosquitoes and hammer the unit. And it's true that the drones can be fought, they can be dodged, and you can even shoot them down at close range. What's more, it's important to have trained tactics, techniques, and procedures at platoon level to fire with all the unit's weapons and manage to shoot down those drones. Now, the best thing to do is hide anywhere and get into any hole so that the drones don't see you. What's more, If you look at the drones, 90% of the time they hit their target. Of course, in the case of the kamikaze drones, almost always. In the case of pocket drones, it's a little less common, but in the case of walking drones, it's almost always infantry that have been caught in the open. They've been caught outside their trench, while moving towards the enemy trench or inside one of their own trenches. And they've been caught in the open, and that's where they inflict the brunt of the casualties. Which tells us that, well, in reality, if you stay in your lair, let's say, in your burrow, it's much less likely that you'll be caught there. You also see videos of attacks on infantry in trenches, but they're much less common and, in addition, due to their angle, walking drones lose effectiveness in that type of attack. So in those cases, it's the pocket bombers that are in charge of dropping explosive charges and attacking the trenches. But the pocket bomber needs to reach a static, overhead position with respect to its target, so it is easier to shoot it down and even dodge it. But this must be made very clear. If you have been caught on foot while moving from your trench to the enemy's, that is when you are almost lost. It is very difficult for you. You will have to deal with drones. Basically, this is the reason why we see assaults in armored vehicles or motorcycles, because the aim is to close the gap and cross no man's land as quickly as possible to reduce the window of exposure to enemy drones. Now, let's suppose that the unit has done well and has managed to cross no man's land quickly. In other words, let's imagine that it has managed to make a good plan and put it into practice. And what exactly would a good plan be? A good plan is one that gathers as much information as possible and distributes and uses it in the time available. Let me give you an example. Thanks to your drones and observers, you can clearly identify the enemy position you want to assault and the opposing positions next to it so as not to be surprised. Your engineers identify the minefields or minefields, the type of devices inside them, that is, whether they are anti-tank mines, anti-personnel mines or a mixture of both, and which should be the ideal crossing points. In addition, you identify the optimal infiltration routes, those that offer ditches, slopes, dry riverbeds or pipes that facilitate movement without being seen if the idea is to attack on foot. By observing the enemy position and its behavior, a commander can know exactly what is in front of him with very few clues. I will give you some of them. The position that is observed is full of garbage and waste. On the other hand, the discipline and hygiene measures within it are observed. Every day that goes by, it is observed how enemy soldiers expand and improve their position, their trench or it practically does not change. When ordered to conduct reconnaissance by fire or a diversionary attack, the enemy reacts quickly with mortar and automatic grenade launcher fire or defensive fire is disorganized. Can the Russian positions support each other with their fire or is it an exposed position with no possibility of receiving rapid support from nearby positions? Hey, what kind of light weapons and uniforms do they have? Are wooden light weapons still visible or do they all look more modern? Are they wearing new uniforms or are they old uniforms? Hey, what about in the radio broadcasts they make in the open? Do they change their codes regularly or do they always keep the same ones and spend a lot of time on the radio? In addition, you can try to observe the markings of specific units, although this is usually very hidden, or you can even look at the type of weaponry they carry or more specifically at the optics. That is, they have optics of some kind, with various magnifications. Usually that is an indication of a better equipped unit, let alone if you see them with night vision or thermal goggles. That means they are a pretty good unit. You can even look at his Kalashnikov. Hey, it's a bare Kalashnikov, with no steel, even with that wood we were talking about or the nickel. Hey, it's a Kalashnikov that looks a lot more modern with fibers or whatever. Naturally, to attack a well-defended position, the assault needs to have very cohesive infantry platoons and the best veteran personnel to teach the rookies what to do in a mission that will put them on edge. In addition, before the actual assault, it is advisable to have carried out several rehearsals with trenches similar to the one you intend to assault. For example, this gentleman, a Spanish legionnaire nicknamed Zafra, who fought in Ukraine and took a trench. Well, according to a Colombian comrade who saw him the last time, practically, before he died, well, of course, the teammates he was with were young recruits from the Hispano battalion, who were, if I remember correctly, Argentines and Uruguayans, who had very little combat experience, who believed that war was like TikTok and who, at the first sign of trouble, perhaps abandoned it. In other words, as always and even more so in infantry matters, that experience is very important, and when you have new people, knowing how to convey it so that they don't have that fear that I suppose anyone would have in a first confrontation, that's very important. Now, once you're close to enemy positions, the problem is the mortar shells and automatic grenade launchers, the latter used with lethal efficiency by the Russians. The AGS-17, for example, uses 30mm grenades with 29 grenade circular magazines and has a firing table that, together with its tripod, allows it to fire up to 10,000 meters. And yes, it's not really very precise, but it makes up for it with its firing rate. And as soon as weapons like this start falling, the infantry knows that they have to get out of there, because with each missed shot the enemy will be adjusting their fire. Therefore, the next one could be the one that hits. However, getting out of the firing zone of mortars or an automatic grenade launcher is easier said than done, because at any moment if you have enemy riflemen nearby, they are going to shoot you, not to mention that your situation is a little worse. Because yes, at that point it is not uncommon to have injuries of varying degrees. Those who are worse off cannot even move, and those who are better off can barely limp, which forces you to decide who can move and where and who stays there to endure the mortar fire, which usually forces another critical decision, which is the most experienced medic in the platoon. What does he do? Does he stay to take care of the wounded knowing that mortar fire will rain down on them, or does he leave knowing that one of them could die without his care? That is very hard. And be careful, because this isn't always about clearing a trench that you know and have identified, right? There are often underground bunkers with impossible to identify access points that also have hidden branches, tunnels that allow the enemy to appear from behind. In other words, you can find yourself in situations like the one with the chosen company that you see in this video, where they can't enter that type of bunker where they think there are several Russian soldiers, but they can't identify the entrance, and that, at the same time they're being rained down with mortars, and the unit keeps suffering casualties. That's why the people in the chosen company and other regular units often end up improvising new explosive devices by putting others together. For example, a very common one is to stack several anti-tank mines, which Soviet mines are also designed to demolish bridges or something like that. Stacking several anti-tank mines and using them to blow up a house or a bunker where you think there are people inside, but you can't find the entrance because they have everything sealed up so well. And while this is happening, that's when the mortars and automatic grenades start raining down and the soldier feels different types of injuries. For example, mortar grenades sometimes use flechette, a type of shrapnel that throws hundreds of spikes at high speed that stick all over your body. And what happens when the mortar grenade has fallen a little far away? Well, those flechettes fall and hit you, but they arrive at a slower speed and don't penetrate your clothing. But as soon as they hit you, you already know that it has fallen quite close. Mortars also use projectiles that explode in a tremendous explosion that scatters shrapnel massively, about 100 fragments in a radius of 15 to 25 meters. Shrapnel that is usually much more lethal and powerful than that of the flechette or automatic grenades. And then comes the phase of, hey, get into that bunker or that trench and have to clear it. And we're going to talk about that in the next video. We're going to talk about what happens when you've managed to overcome all these things and you can stand in front of the enemy unit and hand-to-hand combat begins. There have even been close combat situations. Well, we'll see that in the next video. It's something sad and terrible, but interesting to study in a certain sense, because it allows us to have a more concrete perspective of what happens to a unit when it's subjected to these circumstances and why the assaults fail. The bulk of it, what happens when it's a good unit that fails, what usually happens? Well, in the end, if you haven't been intercepted during the approach phase and even if you manage to position yourself next to the enemy trench, mortars and automatic grenades start falling right away, and then the drones arrive shortly after. So in the end, you start to have some casualties because of that, even from rifle fire, and you find yourself in the predicament of saying, "Look, I'm leaving," because reinforcements aren't arriving, right? It's a relatively common situation from what I've seen. So that's it, that's all. Give me your opinion. What do you think? What did I perhaps forget to add? What would you add? It's exactly the same for the Ukrainians, obviously. Well, having said that, thank you very much to everyone for being there, as always, and I invite you to subscribe to The Political Room, which has more and more interesting content all the time. In addition, from now on we're going to offer biographies of characters, of very prominent current political figures, right? Okay, that's all. I'll leave all the links below, as always. Thank you all very much for being there and see you later.